Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program, 268 in the series. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. We have Shante Garth in the booth, and I am so excited.
I'm excited. We have a special show tonight.
Very special. Very special program. And one of the great radio actresses and TV actresses of our time, Gloria McMillan, is with us live on the phone. We're going to talk to her in just a few minutes. She, of course, was on tons and tons of radio and TV shows, but she may be best remembered as Harriet Conklin for all of the radio and TV episodes of Our Miss Brooks, and she's standing by from her home in L.A. I can't wait to talk to her.
And I was going to say, all of the radio shows that we are playing tonight include Gloria McMillan, so we're excited to showcase her talent tonight.
Yes, we have an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly, a quarter-hour episode, her starring with Jim and Marion Jordan. Then it's Our Miss Brooks, where she appears with Eve Arden and all the gang on Our Miss Brooks. Then we have her guest starring on a Halls of Ivy episode with Ronald and Benita Coleman. That's all coming your way after these words. Stick around. All right, Lisa.
Okay, Carl.
We're going to say hello in just a moment to Gloria McMillan, but I want to give out our phone line. If
yes.
any of our listeners would like to ask Gloria McMillan a question about the radio or TV days, her career, or what she's doing now, which we're going to ask her.
Yeah.
Just call us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. A lot of people, I'm sure, are going to call. We'll try to get a couple of calls. But let's say hello now to our very special guest, Gloria McMillan. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for being on the show with us. It's so great to talk to you.
This is very exciting.
Aw, you're so sweet. I want to introduce you to Lisa Wolf, my co-host.
Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Lisa.
You know, we've been doing so much research on you and listening to some of your older interviews and looking at all the work you've done. And Carl and I can honestly say that we are in awe of your career.
Yes.
And not only of your career, but of your attitude toward it. And I know you seem so appreciative of the life and the opportunities that you had, which is just really so refreshing.
Oh, thank you so much. Gosh.
Well, yeah, when we were listening to some of the things and reading things about you, Gloria, you talked about how you felt you were such a lucky kid to be able to be on these radio shows. Could you reflect a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. I do feel that way even today. When I started in radio, it seemed as though everybody I worked with just was so kind, and that's not a phony thing or anything. It's just a fact. And they treated me like I was there. When I worked with Eve Arden, she treated me as if I were her daughter.
Yeah.
She was so good to me and kind, and Gail Gordon and Dick Crenna, that's from Our Miss Brooks days.
Right.
And then other radio shows that I did, they were all the same. I never, and I know this sounds interesting or strange, but I really never had an experience where I could have gone home with my mom and said, you know what, Mom, I don't want to do that anymore.
You know, that is interesting. It seems like we hear all these stories today about all these horror stories of children working in the business, and yet your stories are all so positive and uplifting. Do you think it was a different time, or do you think that was just the air that you gave off to the people you were working with?
No, I think it was the era. It was that period of time. But I was just extremely blessed.
Yeah.
to work with Eve Arden and Gail Gordon and Dick Kremit. That we all became, we had a phone call. I had a phone call to come to the studio because I was going to be in a show, in one of the shows. And I had no idea. I walked in and there was Eve and all these wonderful people. And I really thought I was going to just pass out because I had no idea. I had no idea. I never auditioned. I just got a call in on rate, which was the radio artist phone line, and it was just absolutely, once I connected with Eve and Gail and Dick, and I know this isn't very exciting, but it was just family.
Yeah.
We cared about each other. We worked together. And none of them were difficult.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, one experience I had that just says it all is we worked, you know, with sound crews, and we worked with music and all that stuff. And I had a guy who used a not a good word, and boy, she stopped that rehearsal. She said, cut. Okay, take a break, and she put up her finger, come here.
Oh, boy.
And this Eve Arden. Guy, he was one of the sound guys, you know, and he used the F word, and she said, we have a young girl on here.
Oh, see, they were protecting you.
That is so great. Well, we want to talk more about Eve Arden, but we have a caller wants to ask you a question. Let's talk with Stephanie. She wants to talk to Gloria McMillan.
Hi, this is such an hi there, Gloria McMillan, and hi, Lisa and Carl.
Nice,
this is such an honor. It really is. I have loved old time radio for years, and I really love our Miss Brooks. You guys, what a such a talented cast and such a funny show. I mean, you know, you talk about being able to. I mean, I literally, you know, can see Connie Brooks just rolling her eyes. You know, and
yeah.
You guys are all so talented. Gail Gordon, and who was the lady that played the landlady? Jane
Morgan.
Jane Morgan, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the whole cast, and I just was wondering, you kind of were doing that a little bit, just to give thumbnail descriptions of all the, you know, each person in the cast, like, you know, one maybe really special thing about them, and I can hang up and listen, you guys, okay?
Oh, that's so nice, Stephanie. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, all of you. And Miss McMillan, this is, like, it's a pleasure. I, you know, love you. You're just sweet as Harriet Conklin. I mean, really, really wonderful. And
oh, I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So do you have, like, could you give us a thumbnail maybe of each one, what they were kind of like behind the scenes and things, Gloria?
Well, yeah, it's kind of boring, actually, because they were all just wonderful. You know, it just seemed as though we got the call from Rate, which was the company that called actors and radio people into, you know, work. And I had no idea what it was. I just knew I'd been doing a lot of radio. And I realized when I got there, that was Eve Arden and Gail Gordon and, you know.
Yeah.
My goodness. I can remember telling my mom, who was always there with me, but I mean outside, not in the studio. I said, Mom, I can't believe this. These are all just very famous people.
Aww.
And she said, honey, just love it. Enjoy it. It's going to be great.
So your mom was obviously very supportive of what you're doing.
Fantastic. Yeah. And she later became she had kids in radio, and she was an agent later on.
Wow.
She was the first female Hollywood agent.
Wow.
They were all men up to then. And
your mom was a trailblazer.
Yeah, very progressive.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she had wonderful, wonderful clients.
Wow.
But it was because it was kind of fun. I can remember going up to Ralph's Market, and my mom said, gee, that was up from where we lived in Beverly Hills, and we walked up there all the time, she and I and my sis, and she said, oh, gosh, what am I going to do now? You've got this job. And, well, I'll just find something to do. And it wasn't a day before she had to go up there to get something. I don't know. And I stayed home. She came home. And she said, well, I found my first client. He's, you know, a little boy, and from there she just flew.
She just started taking clients and getting them in radio and TV, huh?
Yes.
And she was a working mom, too.
That's so great. So I want to ask you, I have a question for you, Gloria. So the many of these classic radio shows made the transition to television, and our Miss Brooks made a very successful transition to television. What was that like for you? Because here you were in front of a live studio audience on the radio and going up and not having to memorize your lines. You were just kind of familiar with your lines, I'm sure, with the script. What was it like making that transition where, and was there a studio audience? I don't think there was with the TV show, right? Or was there?
There was at times, certain times, mm-hmm. but the reason I think I enjoyed it was I worked as a kid and had acting classes when I was little in L.A., and I worked on other shows, excuse me, and so for me, this was just a job, had no idea what it was going to turn into, no idea at all, and Eve and Gail and Dick were just very unique people. They really were. We all loved each other. We all got along. There were no negative attitude people at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was due, of course, Dick was so much fun, and Gail was like a second father for me.
Yeah.
My dad had died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was a railroad guy, and he had been killed at work, and I was without a father, and Gail just became that person.
Wow. So almost like, you know, the character on the radio, you know, he was your dad on the radio, was almost like a dad in real life.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Very, very definitely.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
That you had like a family there. I mean, that was your second family.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, and everybody took care of everybody. There were no attitudes. There were no... I mean, I know that all sounds kind of boring and fake, but it's the fact.
No, not at all. So
it was Eve who really set the feel in the studio and at rehearsal and everything. She wanted everybody to be good, and she didn't put anybody down. She didn't do any of those negative things.
Yeah.
We loved her, and she loved us.
Wow, she was something. And you did so many other radio shows, too, like Lux Radio Theater.
Oh,
and just,
God.
I mean, you were on a lot of Lux Theaters. I was looking up on your, you know, on your resume and things. And we have three shows here that we're going to play tonight. You're the shining star all night tonight for us because we have you with Jim and Mary and Jordan on a Fibber McGee and Molly episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot of fun. That's an episode from 1954. Then we have an Our Miss Brooks episode from 1950 where Stretch Snodgrass is in love, and they think it may be with you. And so Dick Crenna, as your boyfriend's not too happy about that. And then you're with Ronald and Benita Coleman on a Halls of Ivy episode.
Yes. Oh, I was just so lucky and blessed.
Oh, my gosh.
I did a lot of radio from the time I was 4 years old.
Do you remember those exact episodes? Do you remember doing them?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Oh, wow.
I think you're almost in awe when you did a Lux Radio. That was like the ultimate elegance.
Sure. That was a big show.
Oh, it was a big thing. We had an audience.
Mm-hmm.
We had the microphones, of course, and on stage we had our seats, our chairs and places. It was not a mess. It was so organized.
Right, and that was an hour long show, and I believe there was several rehearsals. And then Cecil B. DeMille was the host of that show.
Oh,
got to work with him.
Oh, my gosh. And when my mom, I couldn't have done any of this without my mom. She was not a Hollywood mother. She was just a wonderful mother. And she just, She never pushed me. She said, if you want to do that, do you want to do that show? She was not a Hollywood mother. Let's just put it that way.
I could just tell by the way you talk about your mother throughout this whole interview that it's just so endearing and it's just so warm and so sweet to hear that.
But yeah.
No, it's the truth. And I think later when I was under contract, she started her own agency for kids. And she was the first female agent in Hollywood.
Hmm.
And she had a string of people that she...
Wow.
You know, was their agent because she knew. I mean, she knew the business.
She's been through it, sure.
People and I'm so proud of her. She was a wonderful mother.
Wow, it sounds like it. And Eve Arden, you know, it was so great then to see her career and on TV. And then she was in the Grease movies where she was Mrs. McGee or Principal McGee, I think it was, which probably was a throwback to Fibber McGee. Maybe,
right.
And Molly.
But
tell us, Gloria, now tell us what you have a business right now, right? Tell us a little bit about that. It's very interesting.
My husband and I have a studio, and it's an acting, it's a theater event, and we teach acting and dance and tap, ballet, all of it. And my husband is a wonderful dancer. And theater person. He's a great actor.
Tell us his name.
Ron.
Yeah. And so this school and acting classes are where? Tell us where and what's the name of it.
Well, they're in San Bernardino.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, that's okay. This signal reaches. We're on a big station here. You can hear us all over the country.
Oh my goodness. Well, I was blessed because I just had really good people all my life. Things that as it happened during rehearsal and shows that in normal theater, they would just be, you'd just let them go and say, oh, that's just show business. Eve never did that. Gail never did that. They looked out for me like I was their child, and I am grateful to this day.
I think we're going to have to head out your way and check out this studio.
Yeah, we want to learn how to act and dance.
We do.
It's fun.
I have to say thank you so much, Gloria, for everything you've done in radio and TV and entertained us so many years. And we your voice, when we listen to these radio shows, we can pick you out because you have this such a sweet, loving voice.
You still have
and
that
she,
voice.
And I was going to say, she still has it.
I just want you to know, listening to your voice, I think we're all falling in love with you over and over and over again. And you just...
Oh, that's so kind.
We love hearing you, and we love hearing your voice now, and you sound wonderful. So that's been a treat for us tonight.
Yeah, thank you for all of the entertainment, everything you've done, Gloria. Thanks for being on the show. We'd love to have you back again.
Come to Chicago and
be
you
on
know,
live with us here.
Knock down the windows here, will you?
That sounds like a fun idea.
Yeah, please let us know.
Carl will take you out for dinner.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will. You and your husband. So it's just been such a pleasure. We're going to actually now play throughout the night these other radio shows with you in them, and then I will send you a link where you can hear them all in this interview.
Would you really do
yes,
that?
We're going to do that. In fact, well, I'll be able to do it
we'll do it tonight.
The end of the night or tomorrow. So,
my gosh, that's so exciting.
It'll be great. I'll probably need to, I'm not sure if I have your email, but I'll get that. Don't hang up when we hang up. If Shante here will get your email. But thanks for being on the air with us and for all you've done, Gloria.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been
all
a
right.
pleasure.
That
Thank
was
you.
Gloria McMillan.
Thank you.
She's so wonderful. We're going to hear her in Fibber McGee and Molly coming your way next. Stick around.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back, and that was so much fun talking to Gloria McMillan.
She is an amazing woman, no question.
Harriet Conklin.
It was above and beyond all of her fame and from radio and television. Just what a nice, wonderful, woman.
Very nice woman. And we're going to hear how talented she is in three classic radio shows all the way to 2 a.m. right here on the WGN Radio Theater. I do want to remind everybody that we have a website for this show. It's WGNRadioTheater.com. Check out all of our things at our website. And we have a text in line, and we love getting your texts, 312-981-7200. Please text in, because I don't want Lisa to fall asleep.
No, I've got a lot of texts. I haven't answered, but I'm reading everything, and I appreciate it, all of the kind words about the interview. So we appreciate
that. By second or third hour, usually Lisa's...
Yeah.
We don't want that.
So far, so good.
Yeah, we want her. We're going to keep her up. 312.
And we have a Facebook page as well, of course. Remember to go there and like us. And, of course, you're welcome to comment. Check out the photos of Gloria McMillan and all of the radio shows and our fun fact. So
yeah,
you can check that
fact,
out about
I think,
Eve
is
Arden.
On Eve Arden, right. Yep. All right, 312-981-7200 is our text in line. But right now, we're going to listen to our first classic radio show. It's a quarter-hour Fibber McGee and Molly episode. This is from November 9th, 1954. Now the stars are Jim and Marianne Jordan. Special guest is Gloria McMillan, and she plays Fibber's relative who's arriving on a train to Wistful Vista. Let's tune this in now. Quarter hour episode of Fibber McGee and Molly.
It's time for Fibber McGee and Molly. Sundays through Thursdays, NBC brings you Fibber McGee and Molly transcribed. The show is written by Phil Leslie and Len Levinson and directed by Max Huttle. After these few words from Fibber and Molly, we'll be right into today's story.
McGee, look what I fished out of the attic today. Published in 1899.
Oh, for the love of Mike. Book on how to raise children.
Yeah.
Where do we get this? Don't tell me they were writing books about that away back then.
Seems they were. And see here under the title, someone scribbled, Feed 'em, Love 'em, Learn 'em.
Feed 'em, Love 'em, Learn 'em.
Isn't that cute?
Makes pretty good sense even today. First two don't take any more trouble than they used to, and with the Prudential Education Plan in the family cookie jar, seeing the youngsters through school is a whole lot easier, too.
Prudential Education Plan. Maybe that's a long name, folks, but believe me, it's the shortest, safest way for each one of you mothers and fathers to guarantee money for your children's education. Even if Dad isn't here when the time comes for them to go away to school, you can be sure that the money will be there to pay for college expenses.
Yep, and the best time to prepare for that great cap and gown day is right now. You pay for this plan little by little over the years.
Why don't you get in touch with your Prudential agent? Let him tell you about a Prudential Education Plan. The easy way to make sure your children will have that all-important college education.
Mr. and Mrs. McGee were informed yesterday that Uncle Lucky McGee's kid Jerry was going to stop overnight with them tonight. So, here they are now making last-minute preparations to entertain their guest.
So I stopped in Kramer's drugstore, Molly, and look what I picked up for Jerry. Little gift.
What is it?
Now, let me show you. Brand new type of safety razor. It's called the Nevernick. Want me to lather up and show you how it works?
Well, ordinarily, I'd be fascinated at the prospect of watching you shave, McGee, but I haven't time now.
Oh?
I'm just going up to straighten up the guest room.
Well, here, I'll just explain it to you then. You see, a face is either concave or convex.
Oh? Mm-hmm.
Now, for thousands of years, razors have all been made straight, but this razor is concave on one side and convex on the other, see?
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Be fine for two-faced people, although the ones I have in mind don't shave. Not that she shouldn't, you understand. She just doesn't.
I figure a young fellow Jerry's age, you know, hasn't been shaving very long. In fact, all of us McGee's have had tender skins, except, of course, Uncle Sycamore. He had a complexion on him like a well-aged alligator purse.
How'd he get that way?
Oh, from the years he worked in the New Mexico desert. He was a lifeguard at Mirage Lake.
Mirage Lake?
Yeah. This mirage looked so real, you know, like a real lake, that people kept throwing themselves into it, and Uncle Sycamore would have to go drag him ashore to keep him from drowning. What you stopping here in the hall for?
For you to open the guest room door for me. I hate to make such an unusual request, but with these pillows in my arms...
Oh, that's okay. Don't apologize. I'll put this new razor on the dresser in here for Jerry. Hey.
Hmm?
Boy, we'll sure have to get busy and do something about this room before he gets here, won't we?
Why, what do you mean? It's the prettiest room in the house.
Pretty is right, but gee whiz, it don't look much like a masculine, clean-cut, all-American boy's room like Jerry McGee is, does it?
Well, it's my guest room. I can't refurnish it to suit the mood of whoever happens to spend the night in it. Not on my little budget.
I know, but my gosh, all these flowered pillows and frilly pleats and fancy pincushions and stuff. And hey, where's my old moose head that hung over the bed there when Uncle Dennis lived here with us?
Don't you remember? It disappeared one day.
Oh, yeah, but after Uncle Dennis left, I recognized it downtown in the window of Swifty's Pledge and Redeem Parlor. Oh, yeah. Cost me $4 to get it out of Hawk.
Wasted money.
So, how come we never put it back where it belongs?
I did put it where it belongs. In the storeroom with its ugly face to the wall.
Well, I'll just go get that baby and put
where
it right
back. Where are you going?
I'm going down to get my favorite trophy and put it back in its place of honor. And furthermore, I'm going to dress that room up a little. Hang some fishing calendars. Put my pipe rack in there. See if I can find a picture of Marilyn Monroe someplace. And
Roger, boy!
Just set him down in there and come help me with something, will you, old-timer?
Okay, I'm game. What's the project, Johnny? Animal, vegetable, or mineral?
Very definitely animal. Now let me find the light. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Looks like a moose with his head turned to the wall. He done something bad, Johnny?
No. Just ashamed to face us ever since Uncle Dennis took him downtown and hawked him for $4. Here, help me turn him around. Turn around.
There. Oh, let's turn him back to the wall, Johnny. This is the meanest-looking moose puss I ever did see.
Never mind the small talk. Help me upstairs with it. I'm going to hang this trophy back on the guest room wall and show it to my cousin Jerry.
What's it stuffed with? Cement?
Carefully, don't knock the horns off. This is a real fine trophy, this moose head is. No. I got this baby with a bow and arrow.
You got this mass of moose with a bow and arrow?
Yep.
I don't believe it. I wouldn't believe it if you swore it on a bale of Bibles and the moose signed an affidavit to it.
What wouldn't you believe, Mr. Oldtimer?
Oh, hello there, daughter. I don't believe Johnny here got that moose with a bow and arrow. That's what.
Oddly enough, it's true.
Huh?
You can take my word for it.
There, you'll believe her, won't you? That settles it. Subject closed. Now we gotta hurry if we're gonna be ready when Doc Gamble picks us up to meet Jerry at the railroad station.
The way McGee got that moose with a bow and arrow, Mr. Oldtimer, was at the county fair. He hit the most balloons and the moose head was first prize. You
did. 4:08, that clock says.
Trains due at 4:10, so just relax, McGee.
Okay.
Dr. Gamble said he'd get you here before the train did, and he did, didn't he?
And without turning on my emergency siren, like you kept yelling for me to do, too.
Well, I thought you could use a little advertising coming through 14th and Oak, Doc. You should learn how to blow your own horn, Ducky.
If you mean for me to lean on my emergency police siren while I have you in the car.
Why, sure. Then the next day they see me walking around hale and hearty, they think you snatched me from the grave, you see.
And you think that'd make me popular in this town?
What else?
Oh, you dreamer, you.
Huh?
If the word got around town that I saved your life, an aroused citizenry would run me out of town so fast.
Oh, is that so, you big ox doctor? Well, for your big fat information, there's plenty of people in this town that's interested in my health and welfare.
Name one.
Me. And hush, the both of you. A train just pulled in at that gate over there. At least people are coming out.
Well, come on, let's get over there.
No, that's what I say. Come on.
Well, I hate to bring it up at this late date, but how are we going to recognize this cousin of yours, McGee?
Cousin Jerry? That's as easy as frisking a seal. He's a McGee, isn't he? So he'll look like a McGee.
Stupid, you mean?
Never mind the funny sands, Wide Bottom. Just keep looking in that direction while I look this way, and hey, that looks like that might be him.
Where? Which one?
Big, broad-shouldered, kind of handsome guy with a confused look. Coming this way, I bet that's him. I'll head him off.
Well, a confused look is a McGee trait, all right.
Oh, hi, Cousin Jerry. I knew you in a minute, boy. Put her there, cuz.
What's the is that Gorgon Schnarr? Nyet, nyet. Das Amerikanische Flaggen had the blog to God.
Ain't him.
That's what I thought he said.
I don't like to be an old wet blanket, McGee, but it doesn't look like your boy came in on that train.
Doggone it, he's got to be on that train, Doc. We got everything all set for him.
I've got a roast in the oven.
I got the guest room all redecorated. I got him dates for tonight with two very pretty girls. He's supposed to jump center for the basketball team. Just the first quarter before he picks up his dates. And before we eat dinner, I got him set for a tennis match. And all day tomorrow he's
going
to...
Great, Scott. Maybe the kid got wind of the schedule you planned for him and dropped off the train in Slow Rapids. Or say, maybe he passed us and is out on the sidewalk somewhere. Are you sure you know what the boy looks like?
Well, I don't know, Doctor. McGee has a picture of him, but I don't know whether he'd recognize the lad out of his high chair or not. The snapshot is 21 years old.
I'll recognize him. Just keep watching. Gee whiz.
I think you're stood up. Looks like somebody else was left waiting at the gate, too, Molly.
Where? Oh, see? The girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I noticed her standing around. Can we help you in any way, miss?
Well, I don't know. I was supposed to meet a Mr. McGee here at the train.
Well, get in line, sis. So are we.
Yes, we've been looking for him, but so far...
You're supposed to meet him, too, huh? Here?
Yes. I thought I'd find him.
Don't you know him when you see him, either?
No. All I know about him is that he's married, and you see...
Married? My gosh, I never knew about that.
Heavenly days. And you've got dates for him tonight, McGee.
Oh, fine.
Why, that son of a gun. Nobody told me he was married. Well, when did you find out about it, sis?
Well, I... You mean about his being married?
Why, that son of a gun. Married, eh?
Look, maybe I can help
you. Do you mean to tell me that that fella has you down here to meet him and him with a wife? Oh. Have you been corresponding with him, dear, and just found out, or what?
Oh, no. I'm afraid I'm confused here.
Let me get in on this. Maybe I can help to clear up
No wonder he didn't show up. Afraid to face the music. Married, eh? Why, that son of a gun.
Hey, wait a minute. When did you hear about this young cousin of yours coming?
Yesterday morning, a telegram came.
It was read to us over the phone.
And when did you last see this cousin, aside from the picture in the high chair?
Well, I can't recall that I ever did, but he's Uncle Lucky's boy.
Uncle Lucky's boy? Uncle Lucky hasn't any boy.
Huh? Are you trying to tell me that my Uncle Lucky McGee ain't got a boy named Jerry? I'm Uncle Lucky's nephew, Fibber, and I ought to know.
Well, I'm your Uncle Lucky's daughter, Geraldine.
What?
And I ought to know.
What? Oh. Geraldine? Jerry? Jerry.
Sure.
Oh, sure. Well, come on, Geraldine. Let's go home.
We'll say goodnight to Fibber and Molly in a moment.
When you put away your toothbrush tomorrow morning, will you try a little experiment? Reach into your medicine chest for that familiar bottle of murine and put 2 drops of murine in each eye. Instantly, your sleepy, heavy-lidded eyes will feel wide awake and eager to greet the day. So why not make this refreshing murine bath for your eyes a daily practice? Do it when you brush your teeth every morning and again just before bedtime. Matter of fact, you can use murine as often every day as you wish. That's because murine bathes and soothes the delicate tissues of the eyes as gently as a tear. You see, murine is compounded of 7 tested ingredients scientifically selected and combined to blend perfectly with the natural fluids of the eyes. Murine makes your eyes feel good, and its daily use helps promote a clean, healthful condition. That's M-U-R-I-N-E. Murine. For your eyes.
Just set her bags there in the hall, Doc. I'll take them upstairs later.
There they are.
Right now, I got some phone calls to make.
Oh, that you have indeed. All over town.
Gee, I hope I'm not being a lot of trouble to you.
Oh, not a bit, Jerry.
Any trouble he has, Jerry, he brought on himself.
Yeah, as the girl basketball player said when she fell and grabbed her teammate's uniform, girls, I pulled a bloomer. I'm going to get one laugh out of this anyhow. Yeah. Hand me the phone, Molly. Thanks. Good night.
Good night, all.
Fibber McGee and Molly is an NBC Radio Network production transcribed. With Bill Thompson as the old-timer, Arthur Q. Bryan as Dr. Gamble, and Gloria McMillan as Cousin Jerry. Be with us again tomorrow night when Mr. McGee finally gets things squared away for Cousin Jerry. He thinks. This is John Wall saying goodnight. Join the great Gildersleeve and all his friends tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
That's a quarter hour episode of Fibber, McGee and Molly, November 9th, 1954, Jim and Mary and Jordan starring, with Gloria McMillan as Cousin Jerry McGee on that program. as heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's see. I'm looking at the schedule here. We have two more classic radio shows that have Gloria McMillan in them.
And this is her claim to fame, Our Miss Brooks from 1950.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one.
This hour.
Yeah, and then we have The Halls of Ivy, where she's a guest along with Ronald and Benita Coleman. Now, tomorrow, we had a little bit of a mix-up. I had a little bit of a...
You're a little mixed up.
I know. You know, I drank too much Roma wine or something like that.
Or something like that.
But let's be specific here. Tomorrow, when we come back, we will have Mr. and Mrs. North, a half-hour episode of Fibber, McGee, and Molly, and then Under Arrest.
I'm clear on that.
Got it?
Yep.
All right, very good. Now, in our next hour, we are going to play our game, Cat's Pride. All right, Lisa Wolf, we're back.
Yes, Carl.
It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. That much I know.
That much you know. It's kind of a crazy night here,
yeah.
Huh? A lot of fun,
it's
crazy.
It's a full moon out there tonight.
I don't know.
There
maybe
was a guy sitting out here.
He had a chair.
He was just sitting out here.
Reading?
Yeah, he was reading, I think. You know, it's nice
it's
night.
Not, it, he's
nice
been night. Out, I've seen him now. That's, I think, the second or third time I've seen him out there.
Yeah, he's...
Is he? I think he's reading out loud.
Yeah, he might be... Maybe
it's only like 30 degrees outside.
He might be listening to our show and just wants to watch us in the window, too. Maybe.
That's a possibility, but a remote
wants
one.
Wants to look at Lisa.
That's a remote possibility.
That's another show. Look at Lisa instead of
no,
listen to Lisa.
No, that's not
that's
a good show.
That's the TV version of our listen to Lisa show.
That I'm not going to condone.
All right, well, thanks, David. Appreciate it. That I know we had an abbreviated news there. There was some, you know,
some weird stuff.
You know,
this going
is live radio. Sometimes things.
I'm pretty
don't
sure
go
it was all Roger's fault.
Exactly.
Somehow. I'm not
it,
sure
it's
how,
probably,
but it probably was.
Probably was.
Yeah.
This hour we are going to play our game, Crack the Quote.
We are,
and we are going to listen to Our Miss Brooks.
Yeah, it's all good, and we're going to be giving away tickets to see the Rosencrantz Mysteries, which is at the Royal George Theater, running through May 6th. So I'm excited about that.
Okay. What's the movie?
The movie is Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah?
I think you should know this
one. I know that one for sure.
Yeah, great.
So the number to call, you can call right now, folks, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the third caller. You'll win some tickets. We're going to play Crack the Quote after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Randy on the line to play Crack the Quote with us tonight. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Hi, Lisa. Hi.
Hey, Randy.
Good. We're glad you're going to play with us. We've got a classic Back to the Future. Everybody's seen Back to the Future. So you've got two lifelines here. You've got Carl and you've got Roger. So we're going to get right into it. I've got three quotes. One of them is right. I think you're going to get this one. Two of them are wrong. Let's see how you do, okay?
All right.
Quote number one, welcome to my latest experiment. This is a big one. Quote number two, we're running the most dangerous experiment in history right now. Quote number three, it's not an experiment if you know it's going to work.
What do you think, Randy?
Three.
Number three. Okay.
Roger, what do you think?
Let's see. Read the first one again.
The first one is welcome to my latest experiment. This is a big one. Number two was we're running the most dangerous experiment in history right now. And number three, it's not an experiment if you know it's going to work.
I'll go number two.
It's okay. Definitely number one.
All right. So Carl says one, Roger says two, and Randy says three. One of you is right. Okay, Shantae.
Yeah. Welcome to my latest experiment. This is a big one.
Carl, congratulations. Oh. You are right.
Ding, 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 ding.
But either way, you are a winner, Randy. I'm so excited to give
Hang
you two tickets.
Hang on a second.
There we go.
I was a little late with the sound effect.
He's very technologically advanced here. Pair of tickets to the Rosencrantz Mysteries. It is returning to Chicago to the Royal George Theater. It's running through May 6th. Now, Dr. Ricardo Rosencrantz, he's a professor at Northwestern University at the Feinberg School of Medicine, and he's bringing his magic to Chicago. So I hope that you enjoy the show. It's really neat. Everybody loves it. I'm sure you're going to love it. You can get information and tickets at the RosencrantzMysteries.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Randy, and for playing our game.
You know, it's funny. I called a few weeks ago,
yeah,
and I got through, and I dropped my phone and hit silence. And
oh, we lost you?
Yeah.
Well, good thing you got through, so you won some great tickets. So at least you got a great prize out of the deal.
When you get butter on your fingers, wipe it off, Randy. That way you won't drop the phone next time.
Well, I didn't believe I even was going to get through.
Right. It was an unexpected surprise. We're glad you got through anyways today.
You did it. All right. Randy did it. He is a big winner. Win some good tickets. And now it's time for everyone to hear Gloria McMillan as Harriet Conklin on Our Miss Brooks. One of the greatest comedy shows of all time, came to radio in 1948. Eve Arden starred as English teacher Connie Brooks. She worked at Madison High School. And, of course, Gail Gordon played Principal Osgood Conklin. Richard Crenna was Walter Denton, along with Jeff Chandler as the bashful biology teacher Philip Boynton. It made a transition to television in 1952, we had the great pleasure of talking with Gloria McMillan earlier in the show, and you will hear her as Harriet Conklin on this episode. Let's go back to October 22nd, 1950. This is called Stretch is in Love Again. Here's part one of Our Miss Brooks.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair. Bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, quite a few romances have started between faculty members teaching at the same school. But for Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, romance is a problem.
It's really two problems. Problem number one is the object of my affections, Mr. Philip Boynton, biology teacher. He's so bashful, he won't even shave himself unless he's wearing a tie. And problem number two is the strict anti-fraternization rule laid down by Madison's beloved principal, Osgood Conklin. Of course, Mr. Boynton devised a very effective method of getting around this rule. He suggested that we stop seeing each other entirely. However, I immediately used my power of veto, and before he could take it to the General Assembly, we convened for two dates away from the school. The last date occurred on Wednesday night, and Thursday morning at breakfast, my landlady asked for the details.
Now tell me everything that happened last night, Connie.
We went to a movie, Mrs. Davis.
And?
And we came home.
And?
And fold up your program, the recital is over. Cream, please.
But what did Mr. Boynton say? What did he do?
Nothing, nothing. Pass the cream.
I can't understand that man. Here he has date after date with a girl who's intelligent, attractive, wholesome.
Chic.
Chic, charming. And what does he do about it?
Nothing. Pass the cream. It's not that he isn't fond of me, Mrs. Davis, but he's been worried lately about someone very near and dear to him.
A relative?
Yes, his pet frog, McDougal. It seems with the cold weather coming on, Mac is very prone to laryngitis, and there are no heating facilities for the cages. The least the school should do is put some heating equipment in there.
Why doesn't Mr. Boynton ask Mr. Conklin for it?
Because Mr. Boynton is almost as terrified of Mr. Conklin as he is of me. We didn't dare ask him for anything.
Then you've got to do it, Connie. Don't you see? If you get the things he needs, Mr. Boynton won't be so preoccupied and worried when he's out on dates with you.
Well, it's worth a try, I guess. Now, if I can remember where I left it, I'll put my face on and get ready for Walter Denton. Walter's driving me to school again.
You mean your car is still in the repair shop?
Yes, the mechanic called yesterday and said it would take a bit longer this time. It seems they're having a little trouble with the motor.
What kind of trouble?
They've misplaced it. I'm glad you picked me up early today, Walter. I've got to stop into Mr. Conklin's office before my first class.
What a depressing way to start off the day. I'm glad I don't have to see our beloved principal this morning. I'm low enough already.
Low?
I feel gloomier than a school teacher's personality. Present company accepted, of course.
Of course. But what's the reason for this blue mood? Did Harriet Conklin give you the go-by?
Oh, no, no, ma'am. No, Harriet and I are still an item. It's Stretch Snodgrass who's preying on my mind.
Maybe that's because he hasn't got one of his own.
I know he's never been exactly a beacon of brilliance scholastically, Miss Brooks, but on that gridiron he's always been a tower of strength. Up to last week, that is.
What happened last week?
Well, you saw the game last Saturday. Didn't you see what he did?
Sure. He picked up a fumble and ran 85 yards with it. Of course, I couldn't quite figure out why I was the only one in my section who was cheering.
He ran the wrong way. That's how Oakhurst beat us on that one numbskull play. Oh, but if you think that was bad, you should see Stretch at practice. He's just awful out there. His blocking is positively sad. And his tackling's getting everybody down.
Isn't that what it's supposed to do?
Please, Miss Brooks, this is no laughing matter. If Stretch doesn't perk up, we'll lose our big game to Clay City next week.
Well, what do you think is the cause of this change in him, Walter?
Well, I know what it is. The big goof's in love.
Love?
And the trouble is he won't tell anybody who the girl is. Hey, wait a minute. He's very fond of you, Miss Brooks. Maybe you could straighten him out. You know, have a talk with him and see...
I'd like to help, Walter, but I've got a more pressing problem this morning. That's why I'm going straight to Mr. Conklin's office.
What could possibly be more pressing than Madison's winning the battle of the year?
My winning the battle of Boynton's lab.
Maybe it's none of my business, Daddy, but I don't think you should start the day off wearing such a long face.
I'm sorry, Harriet. If you'll turn your back for a moment, I'll put on a short face for you.
Well, what's the reason for it, anyhow? Why are you so despondent?
Because of our coach's report on Snodgrass, that's why. He's been playing abominably, and the coach knows the reason. The big moose is in love.
In love? But isn't there something we can do, Daddy?
If there was, I'd be doing it. You don't think I want to lose this game to Jason Brill's Clay City nincompoops, do you?
Of course not, Daddy. I know Mr. Brill's your arch rival.
He's worse than that. He's... No, what's the use? Just no way out. And there's no way I could possibly feel any worse than I do right now.
Have you thought of Miss Brooks, Daddy?
You have just shown me a way.
Brooks might be able to help. If there's one person in this school whom Stretch admires and respects, it's her. Maybe she could pull him out of his doldrums.
So you might have something there at that. As soon as she gets to school, I'll talk to her. Come in.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Conklin. If you're busy, I'll come back later.
Not at all, Miss Brooks. Harriet was just leaving for her class. Run along, dear.
Okay, Daddy. See you later, Miss Brooks.
Goodbye, Harriet.
Sit down, won't you? Over here by my desk. That's the most comfortable chair.
Maybe you don't know who I am. It's Miss Brooks, Mr. Conklin.
I know it's Miss Brooks. And I'm delighted that you dropped in to see me this morning.
You are? Well, then it won't be so difficult to ask a favor of you.
You want a favor of me, Miss Brooks?
Yes, sir.
Now, isn't that a coincidence? I want a favor of you. One hand washes the other, eh?
That's as good a way as any to get them both clean. But my favor isn't exactly for
myself. I don't care what it is, Miss Brooks. If you do a favor for me, I'll do a favor for you. Or as my old commanding officer, Colonel Elliot Reed, used to say, you play ball with me, and I'll play ball with you. He was a Texan.
But what's your favor, Mr. Conklin?
Well, as you know, Madison's big football game with Clay City is to be played next week.
Yes, sir.
You are also aware of my intense rivalry with Jason Brill, their principal.
Yes, sir, but what do you want of me, Mr. Conklin?
Well, it's very simple, Miss Brooks. Perhaps you've heard about Snodgrass running the wrong way last Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know that nobody with half a brain could make a mistake like that twice. Except, perhaps, Snodgrass. And that idiot woman a few rows behind me who kept cheering him.
Next Saturday, I'll keep my mouth shut. What do you think I can do about Stretch, Mr. Conklin?
Well, you may be able to straighten him out. You see, Miss Brooks, he's been even worse in practice this week than in that game last Saturday. And the coach seems to think it's because he's in love.
That's what Walter Denton thinks, too.
Does Denton know with whom?
No, nobody does.
Ah, exactly. And that's where you come in. In his lame-brained, dunce-like way, Snodgrass admires you greatly. He has his reasons, I'm sure.
We lame-brained dunces are pretty clannish.
What I meant was, you seem to be the logical person to find out just what little baggage is turning Snodgrass's head. And I use the word advisedly.
And if I find out, then what?
Then your natural feminine instincts will come to the fore, and you will devise some way to circumvent the activities of the aforementioned bit of baggage. Now then, what is the favor you seek?
Well, Mr. Boynton needs some new equipment for the biology lab, and he's too timid to ask for it.
He shall have it. What kind of equipment?
Some heating facilities, for one thing, and more comfortable cages for his frogs and guinea pigs.
It's done. Anything else?
Else? Well, now that you mention it, I could use a new desk and some new window shades. I also would like to have my room painted a nice, cheerful shade of green.
Miss Brooks. You are speaking with Osgood Conklin, not Winner Take All.
Well, if you feel that way about it, maybe Stretch and his girl should be left alone. After all,
a nice, cheerful shade of green it is. Now, you're sure you know what to do, Miss Brooks?
Leave it to me, Mr. Conklin. When I get through with him, Stretch will not only check his baggage, he won't call for her for 30 days.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. More than 2 years' research showed the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating helped stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way stopped tooth decay best. Better than any other home method of oral hygiene. No other toothpaste or powder, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. Yes, Colgate Dental Cream, and only Colgate Dental Cream, was used in this research. So always use Colgate's to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And when you follow the Colgate way, Colgate Dental Cream stops tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
That is literally a singing commercial there. That was really cool.
Totally reminiscent of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, and 40s. I mean, you could just see behind, mm-hmm. if you use your imagination, there was probably three young ladies in front of a microphone. It sounded like three girls singing there. Gloria would know.
Sure, she would.
And then you had like four or five different guy voices.
Right.
There was a guy that said, blah, 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 whatever. And then you had the announcer, I think it was Vern Smith maybe on this. And it was just, and then they don't call it paste. They call it tooth powder or
dental cream.
Dental cream.
I mean, paste doesn't even make sense. If you think about it, it's a paste.
I mean, now we call it toothpaste.
I think dental cream sounds like a better product.
I wonder when paste came into the
lexicon.
Yes, the lexicon of tooth care.
You're having trouble thinking of words.
Well, he's trying to figure out what lexicon means.
Well, I know what lexicon means. It's a
you're having trouble grasping for words.
Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor.
It?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all those words that bald people.
Lex Luthor has a lexicon.
Lexicon. Yeah.
Isn't that Lex Luthor's car a lexicon?
Yeah,
he's got a Lexus.
That's a convention for it, all.
Or
all bald
he
people.
Drives a Lexus.
Or it's what leprechauns drive. Lexicons. I think, right?
You got it.
All right, let's take a quick break.
You're a little slow.
Then it's more of our
tonight,
hijinks
just tonight
here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, so we have news. We come back. It's more of Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden along with Gloria McMillan. That's coming your way. Then after that, it's The Halls of Ivy from 1950, Ronald and Benita Coleman with a special guest, Gloria McMillan, on that show as well. When we come back here tonight at 11 p.m., we will have what, Lisa?
We have three new radio shows. We have Mr. and Mrs. North.
Yeah.
We have a episode of Fibber, McGee, and Molly, but it's a 30-minute episode, and we have Under Arrest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're under arrest.
Yeah, for what?
You'd be for being mean to me.
A little taste of your own medicine,
Roger,
there.
Roger, she's so mean to
me. It wasn't
me.
It was Roger this time. Roger's the one that said you didn't know what the word meant.
I was just going with the flow. I mean, you know, you learned that in improv, right?
That's
you just
right.
go with the flow, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Two people picking on me, folks.
It was just Roger.
I need my listeners to come to my rescue. I feel like I'm being picked on over here.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead. Reach over and pick on him.
All right.
I'm not going near him.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Lisa, guess who got a surprise box today?
Roger, because I just gave it to him.
I thought this was a question. I had my hand raised. I was going to answer.
Oh,
I just
looked like you were waving at us.
I'm bouncing in my seat.
I could see that.
I was so excited. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
Roger got a
And they were all
box.
Detectives and mysteries and, like, awesome.
We had an Alan Ladd.
Mm-hmm.
That was a box 13.
Box 13.
And we had
Jeff Regan.
Jeff Regan,
Boston
investigator.
Blackie.
Yeah, Boston yeah, Blackie. Yeah.
What else?
There was a detective show.
A detective one with a lot of different detectives.
Oh, Philip Marlowe.
Philip Marlowe,
and
yeah.
then you had one that had a bunch of detectives. Yeah. So yeah. this is how the surprise box works, folks.
You have to get these.
Yes.
Roger, maybe you can take a picture and you could post it on your Facebook
I think
and let
I will
everybody
do that.
Know. That would be helpful.
Wow. That's yeah. why you're in charge.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Surprise boxes are going fast, and you can learn all about it, folks. Just go to our website, WGNRadiotheater.com. There's a pop-up, and you can get a surprise box of classic radio on CD for only $39.99, but you'll get over $150 worth of brand new product of the classic radio. Then we have classic movies and TV shows on DVD. Same thing, $39.99, but you get $150 worth of product. And then the Twilight Zone radio dramas. Yes, indeed. $39.99, $150 worth of product. Roger has his surprise
yes,
box now.
And it even said Roger's surprise box.
Yes,
it must
it
mean
did.
It was for you.
I know.
Handpicked.
Well, I did look around the room, see if there were any
other Rogers, just in case you made a mistake.
Well, I think there's a Roger Wilco up there, isn't there?
Yeah. Roger Ramjet. He's our man.
So do check out the surprise boxes. You will love it. And don't forget, when you are on our website, WGNRadioTheater.com, scroll down a little. You'll see a banner for our brand new app. It's a free app of classic radio that we've produced. And when you download the free app, you will get 10 free classic radio shows. So check out our free app. But right now, it's time for the conclusion to Our Miss Brooks.
Advantage of a free period I had right before lunch and sought out Madison's moon-eyed mastodon, Stretch Snodgrass. I found him near the water fountain in the hall. He was slouching against the wall and seemed half asleep, but when I approached him, he snapped to attention.
Hi.
Hello, Stretch. I hope I'm not keeping you up. I mean, I hope I'm not keeping you from any of your classes, but I would like to talk to you for a few minutes.
You ain't keeping me from nothing, Miss Brooks. French class is the place which I'm supposed to have been at pretty soon from now. But my French can wait.
At least until your English catches up. Stretch, what I wanted to talk to you about was your football playing. You know yourself you're not playing as well as you used to, and a lot of your friends around here are beginning to worry about it.
Why should they worry? Gosh, just because I don't play over my head in every game, everybody gets all upset. After all, you don't get paid to play high school football.
I know, Stretch, but think of the future. Someday you may go to college. You must admit you've been letting down a bit lately.
Oh, I can't help it. This season's been nothing but practice, practice, practice. A guy can't go on like that with just all work and no play. After all, I ain't no auto matron.
No auto matron?
Well, you know, a mechanical man. The kind they call a Robert.
Oh.
Besides, a little relaxer never hurt nobody.
But, Stretch, why should a young boy like yourself be yawning in the middle of the morning?
I'm tired.
I couldn't have thought of a better answer if I'd tried all day.
My new girlfriend thinks relaxing is good for me. She won't even let me quit rumbering and take her home till 1 a.m. It's been going on like that for the last 2 weeks.
Who is this new girlfriend, Stretch?
Oh, no, you don't.
No, I don't what?
You don't get Judy's name out of me. I promise to keep it a secret.
Well, that's your privilege. If you don't want me to know Judy's name, I'm not going to know Judy's name. That's all there is to that. Judy who?
Gosh, I didn't even want that part of her name to get out, but it just slipped. Look, Miss Brooks, you wouldn't want me to break a promise, would you?
Fervently. Listen, Stretch, even if you enjoy all this rumbering, don't your girl's parents object to these late hours every night?
Oh, I'm sure they don't.
How can you be so sure?
Her old man gives me the money to take her out.
What?
Sure, he's not like our principal. Mr. Brill's a real good sport.
Stretch, do you mean to tell me you've been taking out Judy Brill?
How do you know?
A little bird brain told me. Oh, I can't wait to see Mr. Conklin's reaction to this bit of news.
Gosh, Miss Brooks, you're not going to tell Mr. Conklin, are you?
Not yet, Stretch. Out of consideration for his family, there's something I've got to find out first.
What's that?
If his life insurance is paid up. I've talked through your entire lunch, Mr. Boynton, but it couldn't be helped. If we're going to get any favors from Mr. Conklin, we've got to straighten out Stretch Snodgrass.
Well, I'm glad you told me this story, Miss Brooks. Imagine Jason Brill putting his own daughter up to a trick like that. What kind of a girl is this Judy Brill, anyhow?
Well, you know the expression, sweet 16 and never been kissed?
Yes.
When this kid reached 12, she was ineligible. I met her last summer, Mr. Boynton. It isn't generally known, but Mr. Brill wrote me a letter before the last semester began in which he hinted that if I were dissatisfied with Madison for any reason, he'd be happy to have me on the staff at his school.
Oh, he's approached several teachers here, Miss Brooks. It isn't that he wanted you so much. It's just that there are no lengths to which Mr. Brill won't go to harass Mr. Conklin.
Flatterer. But according to reports from some friends on the faculty at Clay City High, Judy Brill is quite a little firebrand. She's at an age now where she considers all males fair game.
There's an age?
This boy's been learning biology as well as teaching it. Look, Mr. Boynton, when I found out that Stretch was going with Jason Brill's daughter, I devised a plan. We're going to beat Jason Brill at his own game and using the same kind of weapon.
But, Miss Brooks, I don't understand. Even if you and I were married today, where could we get a 16-year-old daughter by Saturday?
All these years of going to the zoo and you don't even know a fast stork. Don't you see, Mr. Boynton? All we have to do is to get Stretch to think that Judy is just a flirt and he'll lose all interest in her.
Well, how do we do that?
By letting Stretch catch her on a date with some other boy.
What other boy?
Walter Denton.
Walter Denton?
Did I hear somebody mention my name?
You're just in time, Walter. Sit down, please. Mr. Boynton and I would like to talk to you.
Okay. Have you thought of any way to get Stretch's mind off the mystery woman and back on his football game, Miss Brooks?
Yes, Walter. I've thought of a dilly of a plan. But it requires some cooperation from you.
Well, we should all do whatever we can, Walter. This is a crisis.
Well, what can I do? He won't even tell me the name of this chick.
The name of the chick is Judy Brill, and her father's been paying all expenses to keep Stretch out late every night rumbering.
Rumbering?
Yes. While the Clay City team is getting its rest, Judy Brill is keeping our star player's backfield in motion.
Oh,
of a boy Stretch is, and if we can arrange to have him catch Judy with another boyfriend, I know he'll forget all about her.
Oh, not only forget about her, but it might make him so mad he'll go out on that field Saturday and play the game of his life.
Say, that sounds like a swell idea. Of course, Stretch is boxing champ of Madison, too, so it might not be so pleasant for the guy he catches with his girl. Well, that's a necessary risk, I guess. Who's the chump you've got lined up to be the patsy in this?
Don't be crude, Patsy. Walt. I thought that you'd be happy to volunteer for this job.
Me?
Well, you want to see Madison beat Clay City, don't you?
Well, sure I do, but will I have my bandages off in time? Oh, you've never seen Stretch fight. I have.
Believe me, Walter, Mr. Boynton and I will make sure that Stretch doesn't lay a hand on you.
He doesn't have to. He could kick me to death. I'm afraid you'll just have to count me out, folks.
I'll count you out, but Walter, Stretch is a very dear friend of yours. You don't want to see him ruin his life, do you?
Don't you see, Walter, this girl isn't right for Stretch. It isn't just a football game that's involved. It's a boy's future.
But what about my future?
What about your future?
I want to be around when it gets here. Oh, look, Stretch has a terrible temper, and if he catches me making goo-goo eyes at his girl, he'll clobber me till I'm dismal. Besides, there's Harriet Conklin. Oh, we're virtually betrothed. What would she think if she heard I was out with another girl?
She won't hear, Walter, and even if she does, we can always explain that you were just doing it for the good of your school.
I'm sorry, I'd rather not take the chance.
Surprised at you, Walter. Haven't you any sense of loyalty?
Haven't you any school spirit? This whole thing won't take you more than half an hour. All you have to do is sit on the couch and put your arms around a little red-headed girl with big blue eyes, a cute little turned-up nose, and an adorable mouth.
But I still think that if Stretch... an adorable mouth...
Exquisite.
Nobody can say I haven't got any school spirit. What time and where?
Well, make it 8 o'clock tonight at my place. I'll drop over to Clay City High this afternoon and tell Judy I'm thinking of accepting her father's invitation to join the faculty there next term. Then I'll invite her over to my place for dinner, ostensibly so I can ask some questions about my new pupils.
But supposing she won't come?
Oh, she'll be glad to come. Judy Brill is just a little girl. To be asked to dinner by a woman like Miss Brooks is quite flattering. After all, when you get right down to ages...
When you get right down to ages, I'm almost twice as tall as Judy Brill. I'm glad you were able to come over this evening, Judy.
Me too, Miss Brooks. The dinner was wonderful, and I've enjoyed talking to you about your teaching at Clay City next term.
I suppose you feel you should be out dancing Stretch's feet off, but... You've still got 3 nights before the big game, and not seeing you tonight will only make you more anxious.
You're so right. Men are such problems. They're just like children. You've got to play up to their ego and convince each one he's the only man in your life. Oh, but listen to me telling you about men. A sophisticated, charming woman like you. I just wish I had your knowledge of men.
Want to trade?
Very pleasant coincidence that Walter Dent dropped over, don't you think? He's an awfully cute boy.
Oh, I'm glad you like Walter, Judy. By the way, where did he disappear to?
I didn't disappear. She's on my lap.
Isn't that sweet? What a naive way to get acquainted.
Want me to answer it?
You sit right where you are, Walter.
Yes, you sit right where you are, Walter.
How can I help it? She hasn't budged off me since I said, how do you do, Miss Brill?
I'll get it, Walter.
Well, here we are, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Mr. Boynton. Come in, Stretch.
Thanks.
Well, what brings you to this part of town, Stretch?
Well, I was just walking home when Mr. Boynton drove up alongside the curb in his car and stuck his head out of the window and said, hi, Stretch, just the fellow I've been looking for. How about hopping in and going for a little ride over to Mrs. Brooks's place and having a glass of milk or something, if you haven't got anything better to do? And I didn't have anything better to do, so I said, okay, Mr. Boynton, I'd like nothing better than to hop in and go over to Miss Brooks's place for a glass of milk or something. Have you got any?
So that's what brings you to this part of town. I'll give you some milk later, Stretch. There are some friends of yours in the living room. Come on in. Pardon me, kids, but we've got company.
Hi, Walter. I didn't know that. Judy, what are you doing here?
Well, Miss Brooks invited me over to dinner, and then Walter just sort of dropped by.
He sort of dropped by?
Hold him, Miss Brooks.
Surround him, Mr. Boynton.
What's everybody so jumpy about?
Aren't you sore at me for sitting here with your girl?
Sore? Heck no, Walter. You're doing me a big favor. You see, I got to thinking about what Miss Brooks said this morning, and I realized that I got to get a lot more sleep if I'm going to be any good in the game Saturday.
Oh, but Stretch, dear, you don't have to sleep so much.
Well, sure I do. It ain't that I don't appreciate what you and your dad done for me, Judy. And I certainly ain't mad about all that rumbering.
It's just that for an athlete, rumbering's not as good as slumbering. Now, Walter, if I may make a suggestion, I think you should drop Miss Brill off at the bus station.
What's this all about, anyway? Is this some kind of a plot?
Turnabout is fair play, Miss Brill.
Yeah. And if you'll excuse me right now, I'll turn about and hit the road.
I'll excuse all of you right now. That is, all but you, Mr. Boynton.
Well, this is what I get for accepting the hospitality of a Madison Highite.
Thank you, and good night. Don't slam the door.
Come on, Stretch. The least we can do is drop her off at the bus station. Good night, Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton.
Good night, folks.
Well, it's simmered down to just the two of us, Mr. Boynton. Let's sit down on the couch, hmm?
All right. You know, Miss Brooks, in spite of the fact that I'm a biologist, I've never been overly observant about the emotional reactions of the people around me.
You're not just beating your Bunsen burner, Boynton. That is, you have seemed a little preoccupied at times.
Well, be that as it may, Miss Brooks, your interest in the welfare of my little animals and the trouble you went to see that I got proper heating facilities for my lab have, well, they've made me realize just how much you care.
Really, Mr. Boynton?
Well, yes, indeed. And I want you to know that I care even more than you do.
You care even more than I do?
Well, yes. I've got $5 bet on that game Saturday.
Well, here's $2.50. I'll take half of your bet, and we'll set up housekeeping on the 40-yard line.
Once again, here is Eve Arden.
Here's a message for every young man over 17 years of age. Your National Guard offers you opportunities to train in your spare time while living at home. Yes, train with your hometown buddies using Army and Air Force equipment under the direct supervision of veteran Army and Air Force instructors. You'll receive valuable military experience, increase your civilian skill, and at the same time, you'll be paid at regular service rates. Join the National Guard unit in your community now.
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Luster Clean Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Leonard Smith, and Sandra Gould. Doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days. Yes, 36 leading skin specialists proved in tests on 1,285 different women that Palmolive soap facials, using nothing but Palmolive, brought new complexion beauty to 2 women out of 3. Just wash your face 3 times daily with Palmolive soap, each time for 60 seconds, massaging Palmolive's beauty lather onto your skin. Then rinse and pat dry. So start your Palmolive facials today. Remember, doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days. Be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamont speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
One of the best radio and television comedy shows of all time, Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, with a great cast. I mean, listen to this cast, Lisa. Jeff Chandler, Richard Crenna, Gail Gordon, Gloria McMillan. We had Leonard Smith on that. And you know what? Interestingly, very rarely did our Miss Brooks have people outside their cast on the show, but they did on this particular episode. They brought in Sandra Gould to play the young lady there that that they were fixing Stretch Snodgrass up with, and she later went on to play Mrs. Kravitz on Bewitched, and she was in a lot of radio shows, Sandra Gould. Great show. October 22nd, 1950, sponsored by Colgate Tooth Powder, right? And Luster Cream Shampoo, which was their long-time sponsor. You know, the sponsor of Our Miss Brooks was, for almost the whole run, was Colgate and Luster Cream Shampoo, which is really cool. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I mean, you might have to put Simba on a plane, so...
Oh, I take him all the
this
time.
This is good. We want our pets to be safe.
Well, I don't put him in the overhead bin.
No, that's good.
because I know, did you hear that story
yes,
this week? That
very
just
sad.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
And I don't send him to Japan. That was
maybe he wants to learn Japanese.
No, he just hangs out with me. Yeah.
He sleeps with you too at night, right?
He sleeps in my bed.
Oh,
not like
my
literally
gosh.
With me.
I mean,
in
but
my...
you're cuddling him, right? As he sleeps, or does he sleep by
no,
like,
he usually
your feet?
Sleeps on my feet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God.
And then he gets aggravated if I move. He like jumps up and
wait,
like, looks
he sleeps
at me.
By your feet. What is he? Does he have
you can't come up with the words
I don't know,
tonight.
Where's my vocabulary today? Does he have a clothespin on his
dictionary
nose?
Out,
he
can't,
hey, Roger.
If I knew what you were going to say, I would help
you. I was going to say, does he have a clothespin on his nose? Sleeps by your feet.
He loves me.
God.
That's not even funny. It's my doggy.
Yeah, dogs like cheesy smelling things.
Yeah,
so that's
what well, that must be why.
Right, Roger?
I guess.
There's Roger. What?
Rufus sniffs lawns.
He likes lawns.
He
yeah.
just okay. sniffs
looking
lawns.
Looking for a place to...
no, not. He just sniffs lawns. He's looking for seeds or something to
There's
eat.
There's a lot of good stuff out there.
I don't know. I don't join him.
Well, why not?
I'm holding the leash. That's all I do.
Oh, all right. Well, in our next hour, we have another classic radio show that Gloria McMillan is in. Halls of Ivy, good comedy, Ronald and Benita Coleman. And this was about college. Our Miss Brooks was about high school. Halls of Ivy is about a college. So Gloria McMillan is...
Moving up.
Moving
the
up.
Are you having trouble, Carl? Is Anywho, we also will be doing a Crack the Quote, and we will be giving away a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers.
All right. So a lot coming your way still. One more hour of classic radio. You know, Lisa and I are here every Saturday and Sunday night on WGN, bringing you these classic radio shows, 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. both nights, and it's different shows. Both nights. So if you're only listening to us on Saturday or only listening to us on Sunday, you're missing half of what we do, right?
It would be impossible to repeat a show.
I have a good idea. Why don't you start doing Saturday nights and I'll do Sunday nights?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, Raj, what do you think of that idea?
Don't pull me into this one.
Roger.
I'm
you come
just
in
doing
and
the
do
news.
Saturday and I'll come.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
It's a date. It's a deal.
Yeah, you'd like that, wouldn't
I
you?
I would, yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hour three. Thanks for staying up late with us, folks. This hour, it's the Halls of Ivy, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman with Gloria McMillan as guest on this show from 1950. Before we do that, though, we will play our Cat's Pride Crack the Quote game. What do they win, first of all?
They're going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling.
It's a great prize. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. What's the movie?
The movie is Gladiator.
Gladiator, 312-981-7200. We'll take the second caller. Second caller will play the game with us, and we'll do that right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
That's another dollar for Roger there, royalty.
I thought you were going to go up to $1.50.
No.
No.
When did
no.
I get a raise? I thought it was a quarter.
No, it's a dollar.
You're worth more if you
want
me anyways. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good. We're glad you called in. You ready to play the game?
Yes.
All right. It's Gladiator. Y'all, you have to do tell me which is the correct quote from the movie, and you're a winner either way. Okay, Roger, you're going to help us out?
Yeah, sure.
All right, here we go. Quote number one, how dare you ignore me when I'm speaking? Quote number two, how dare you come to me now? Quote number three, how dare you show your back to me? I know it's not easy.
That would be quote number three, I think.
How dare you show your back to me?
Yes.
All right, Carl? You want me to read the others just
in
case?
Can I hear them one more time?
Number one, how dare you ignore me when I'm speaking? Number two, how dare you come to me now? Number three, how dare you show your back to me?
What do you think, Roger?
I asked you, Carl.
All right, so I say number two.
You say number two. We've got a number one. No, no, we have a number two and a number three. Okay,
I'm going with our caller. I think it's number three if I remember the movie correctly. Mm.
All right, Chante, let's hear it.
How dare you show your back to me?
There you go.
Boom, yeah.
Good job, Tom. You know your stuff.
That's when Gladiator turned his back to the emperor.
You're right.
Is that what
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Exactly. He was in the arena.
That is exactly right. Though that was tough. I did not make that easy on you. Congratulations. You know you're Gladiator for sure.
And, you know, I should know this because everyone always says I look just like Russell Crowe in this movie.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Way to go, Tom.
Wait, you won the...
I love listening to your program and all that.
Oh, thanks, my friend.
I've been an old-time radio buff since I was 12 in 1964.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So
very cool.
The first thing I received for Christmas that year was Jack Benny's Golden Memories of Radio.
See?
And I was bitten by the bug since.
It was an album, right, at that time?
Yes. Six
yeah, I remember. I remember. Way to go, Tom. Thanks a lot.
Wait, don't hang up.
Don't hang up.
Wait, you've won the desktop indoor weather station. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-minute men. So congratulations. We hope you love the prize. And thank you for calling in.
Right.
Take care.
Thanks, Tom. Take care. All right. He's a big winner. And
yeah, he did a good job.
Well,
oh,
I'm batting 500. I got
well,
one
good
right,
job,
one
Roger.
Wrong. Yeah,
well,
Roger.
I'm only betting 500.
Way to go, guys.
If that.
All right, Halls of Ivy. This was a situation comedy series starring Ronald and Benita Coleman. They were real husband and wife in real life. It came to NBC Radio from 1950 until 1952, and it was created by Don Quinn. He was the co-creator of Fibber McGee and Molly, so he knew what he was doing. Coleman was William Todd Hunter Hall. He was president of Ivy College, and his wife, Victoria, a former British musical comedy star, followed the interactions with students, friends, and college trustees. Willard Waterman, who would later play the great Gildersleeve, was board member John Merriweather. Alan Reed, who was the voice of Fred Flintstone, was stuffy English teacher Professor Heathslip. I get that wrong. I want to say Heathsklip, but I get it wrong.
Always so close.
You know, I'm not good with names.
I didn't know that.
But I get your name right, Lisa Wolf.
I didn't know that.
Wolf, Wolf.
Oh, good. You got that
See,
one.
I got it right.
Good, good, good.
No E at the end of Wolf. See, the TV series came to television in 1954. And the television scripts were adapted from the radio scripts. So they took the radio scripts, Lisa, and made television scripts out of them for the TV version.
Yeah, and that's not easy to do.
No, it's not. All right, are you ready for the Halls of Ivy?
Yes.
You're going to hear Gloria McMillan in this show. This is from July 5th, 1950, part one now of the Halls of Ivy.
Gentlemen, the Jaws of Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents transcribed The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
If you like good beer, you'll find it pays to be curious and learn about Schlitz for yourself. And now, the Halls of Ivy.
The Halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's Saturday afternoon, and the Ivy campus has the deserted air of a United States destroyer when the crew is away on shore leave. But there are two still on deck, Commodore William Todd Hunter Hall, otherwise known as the president of Ivy, and his good mate, the former Victoria Cromwell of the English Theater. There's reason for the Halls to be aboard, but to Dr. Hall, the reason is far from good.
I don't know why I stand for it. Year after year, I lose pounds. My nerves are shattered by the mere anticipation of it.
But they love it so, Toddy. It's such an event for them to look forward to. They don't have much fun, you know.
My dear Victoria, to use the word fun when speaking of the Ivy Women's Civic Reform League is ridiculous. Self-improvement is rarely fun, particularly when the necessity for it is so evident.
Dr. Hall, please remember you are speaking of an organization which I have been invited, even urged, to join.
And which for 5 years, to my certain knowledge, you have successfully ducked. I wish you luck for the next five.
Put five more on for me. The one real inducement is that I could at least hear you read a poem to them once a year. Personally, I think it's much too good for them.
If I could get out of this thing, I would gladly give you a personal command performance once a week.
Well, you can't. You've got to be their lion once a year, just as long as you're president of Ivy, unless you don't need their support or their money for the college.
I do. The love of money is the root of all evil. And for Ivy's sake, I'll water the roots. But if it weren't for that horde of women, if there were only a man or two around, I would quite enjoy it. I wouldn't mind once a year exchanging the musty air of the campus for the heady aroma of ham. But to this audience...
Ah, Toddy, they're really very nice.
Yeah, but they frighten me. When I think what putty I am in the hands of one woman, well, this gathering could use me to tighten every loose window pane in America.
You just got opening night jitters.
You think that after appearing before the Women's Civic Reform League 8 years in a row, I'd be a seasoned performer by now.
Yes, too bad you can't have a line of dancing girls for support.
Yes, that sounds most attractive. The chorus of Tarara Boomdie between each verse might really help the box office.
What poem are you doing?
The Eve of St. Agnes. It's a request number and not my favorite among Mr. Keats's work.
Oh. Just what selection would you have preferred, Doctor? The Shooting of Dan McGrew? Pace on the Barroom Floor? Or Boots?
No, I take my poetry rather seriously, as you know. And while I was a great admirer of Robert's service in my youth...
You are now an ex-service man.
But poetry has a function even in this atomic age. Great poets catch something of eternal truth in their lines. Those cobwebs of verity which are as strong as steel, holding in suspension the beauty and perception which distinguish us from the rest of the animal kingdom. I hope you wrote that down, my darling. I can use that again sometime.
Yours of July 5th received and contents noted.
Vicky, who's that?
What?
Out the window. That enormous young fellow slinking back and forth in front of the delphiniums.
Oh, yes.
Seen those shoulders before? Isn't that Philip Carnes, our best fullback?
Why, yes, it is. I believe he's known on the campus as Moose, the Texas Moose.
Very aptly named, though our garden is a trifle small for a game preserve. What's he doing out there?
I wouldn't know, Toddy, unless it has something to do with that little talk I had with him in the bookshop this morning.
A football player in a bookshop? Was it raining?
No, he'd gone in to use the phone. And he seemed so frightfully depressed. He has a love problem, Toddy, and I gave him some very constructive advice.
Oh, I'm sure you were very helpful. What advice did you give this love-torn giant?
I advised him to come and see you.
Oh.
Well, that's what I always advise everybody. I figure I like to see you, so why shouldn't everyone?
Well, thank you. A nice sentiment, although the sequitur is definitely none.
I must say, I didn't expect him so soon. I know you don't want to be disturbed right now.
Well, he seems quite undecided about coming in. Maybe if we're very quiet, he'll go away.
I believe he is going away.
Well, if he is, he'd better start. Anything as large as that will take several hours to get hull down on the horizon.
No, he's coming back. Oh, can't you see him for a few minutes?
Whatever his problem is, I'm sure it'll keep one more day. Young men have a tendency to magnify these things. He can't be as miserable as he looks. Such trivial things as this shouldn't be permitted to. Oh, well. Philip.
Yes, sir?
Come in.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Hall, I suspect you of having nice instincts. In fact, I've been collecting evidence of it for years, and I have you just about convicted.
Well, I might as well see him now and get it over with. I'll probably have a very busy schedule at the college tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow's Sunday.
Oh, well, Sunday will be a busy day, too. Getting the hammock out of the basement, stringing it up, lying in it, getting out and stringing it tighter.
I'll leave you two alone for your man-to-man talk.
Oh, you make me feel like Judge Hardy.
Yeah. Well, you have the large economy-sized Mickey Rooney to deal with, Judge. I hope it's interesting.
Come in, Philip.
Thank you, sir.
Right in here. Sit down, won't you?
Thank you, sir.
You'd better take the large chair.
All right. Gee, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't see that smoking stand. They call me the moose, you know, and it's not because I'm so graceful.
I'm sure it wasn't your fault, Philip. You know, since you came in, the entire room seems to have shrunk. Please visit us often. You make me feel quite dainty. Well, how's spring training coming along?
Just fine, sir. Just fine. I suppose you wonder why I suppose you know why I came over to see you.
Well, Mrs. Hall did mention something about a problem.
You probably think I'm kind of dopey bothering you about something like this.
Oh, not at all. If you just tell me what your problem is.
All right, sir, I will. It's about my girl, Dolores. Dolores Whitaker. I met her the first of this semester in chem lab. We shared the same Bunsen burner. We didn't talk too much at first, just chemistry stuff like H2O. That's water.
Yes, I know. And as a morsel of knowledge to share with one's love, it's a little damp, but it's a definite beginning.
Sure. Well, I asked her to go to my fraternity dance, but she had a date, a guy named Joe Shellhammer. You know Shellhammer, he's that tennis player. He saw us flapping around in white flannels. Well, I didn't like to ask her to break a date with him. But on the other hand, if she did go with Shellhammer...
Philip, I don't mean to rush you, but couldn't we get to the heart of the matter?
Oh, yes, sir. Well, anyhow, we've been going steady for the last 6 months. We have our own private code. It's a love code in Latin.
Well, Latin is the parent of the Romance languages. And at the age of 12, I furthered my own amours with a species of code in pig Latin. A girl named Wilma Crumb. She's now a police matron.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Well, every morning when I pass her in the hall, I say to her, Amo Amasamat. And she says to me, Amama Samata Samant.
Oh, yes, yes. First conjugation, present indicative of the verb amo, meaning to love.
We've been doing that every morning for 6 months. I say to her, Amo Amasamat. And she answers, Amama Samata Samant.
Philip, if you'll pardon my saying so, I not only deplore the monotony of your linguistic exchange, but the nature of your problem still escapes me.
Oh, well, here it is. Yesterday, when I said to her, Amo Amasamat, she didn't Amama Samata Samat.
She didn't what?
That's my problem. Why didn't she?
Well,
maybe she doesn't love me anymore.
I wouldn't jump to conclusions, Philip. She may simply have forgotten.
Forgotten? That's just it. People forget only what they want to forget. I learned that in Psychology 1A.
Oh. Well, I don't believe that's irrefutable evidence that her affections towards you have cooled. She may have had something else on her mind. Girls are not always thinking of boys, you know. Sometimes they think of clothes, particularly if they are about to meet a boy.
That indicates an unconscious resentment of the love object. Something else on her mind, I mean. I learned that in psychology, too.
Oh, my dear Philip, I'm beginning to think that, like knowledge, a little psychology can be a dangerous thing. The human skull has 7 apertures. This permits a sound, sensible thought to escape in a different way every day of the week.
Well, this thing is really getting me down. Overnight, I've gone from 220 pounds down to 218.
Well, Cupid has always exacted his pound of flesh. 2 in your case. You're a large target for an arrow, you know.
I must be getting neurotic.
All right, let's take a break from the Halls of Ivy. We'll have more after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, don't forget, we will be back here tonight with 3 more classic radio shows, Mr. and Mrs. North, a 30-minute episode of Fibber McGee and Molly. We only played a 15-minute episode yesterday. And then Under Arrest, that's our lineup for tonight when we come back here, when Lisa and I make it back here at 11 p.m., right,
and we're
Lisa?
Both going to be here. We haven't turned it into a one-time, to a one-person show.
We won't do that. No. It's more fun doing the show with you.
Yeah, I know.
You're a riot. You're a regular riot, Alice.
Yeah, I know.
As they used to say on the Honeymooners. It's time now for the conclusion to this episode of Halls of Ivy. You will hear Gloria McMillan. I'm making her appearance now in this half. Here is the Halls of Ivy.
Maybe I ought to be analyzed.
My only suggestion is that you select a psychiatrist with a sturdy couch. Otherwise, it might break down before you do.
You're ribbing me now, Dr. Hall.
I guess I deserve it.
Oh, no, forgive me, Philip. I really want to help you.
I know this all sounds pretty goofy, but every morning when I meet Dolores in the hall and she says those few words, it's like telling me she loves me all over again. It makes me feel good. It picks me up for the whole day. I go around saying to myself, Moose, you're a lucky stiff. She really loves you. I guess it's kind of hard for anyone else to understand.
Philip, I'm going to tell you something I've never told anyone before. About an hour from now, I'm going to recite a poem for a local group. Something I do every year. It's not an earth-shaking event, but it's important to the organization which sponsors it. Every year when they call on me, I stand up to face that audience with my knees trembling. And then I reach into my coat pocket, and I'll find a note. It's a note from my wife. Just a few lines of encouragement. She never fails. Oh, it's a small thing, Philip, but it's very important to me. So you see, I do understand.
Yes, sir, I guess you do. Funny, you never think of older people doing things like that.
One of the compensations for being older people is a certain increase in understanding and a slight dulling of supersensitiveness. One is not so slowed down by being cut to the quick. When young people are in love, they tend to be upset by little things. If you allow yourself to be unduly hurt by every tiny act of inattention, it's like not seeing the forest for the trees.
Say, that's a good way to put it.
It always has been. But perhaps you'll take the word of an older man who may be just a little bit more experienced about these things. I was about to say wiser, but that's a different thing. Experience and wisdom are bedfellows, but sometimes experience snores too loudly.
Well, gee, thanks, Dr. Hall. I'm going to run over and see Dolores right now. Gosh, I knocked it over again.
Buddy.
Oh, come in, my dear.
Yeah. Where's Philip?
I'm down here, Miss Hall. I'm afraid I got ashes all over the rug. I'm trying to brush them up.
Oh.
Yes, Vicky, you just missed a very thrilling play. Philip straight-armed the smoking stand, reversed his field, eluded the easy chair, then crashed over for a touchdown under the piano.
Oh. I'm sorry I wasn't here to lead the cheering section. I came in to see what coat you're going to wear today, Toddy.
Oh, the dark blue, I think.
All right. I'll get it out and give it a good brushing. We can't give the ladies a dusty prexy. I'll be back in a minute.
There you are, Philip. Every year she finds some excuse to whisk my coat away for a few moments.
This is when she puts a note in your pocket?
This is it.
Gee, love is wonderful. Isn't it, Dr. Hall?
It is, Philip. You may quote me on that. Well, not as the author of the statement, but as an enthusiastic endorsement.
Well, good night, Dr. Hall, and thanks a million.
Not at all, Philip. Good night. Ha, ha, ha. It was a lover and his lass with a hey and a ho and a hey, nonny no. When birds do sing, hey, ding-a-ding-a-ding, with a hey and a ho, I don't know how it goes. My suit ready, Victoria?
Yes. And while you're changing, I'll get some tea and sandwiches ready. It won't take long. You just listen for the patter of little caraway seeds.
Wonderful. Well, I suppose the note is in the right-hand pocket as you... No? Where's the left one, then? Just so we don't get in a rut. Or perhaps the breast pocket. No, only the handkerchief. That leaves the inside one, then. As the old saying has it, things are always in the last place you look, because after you find them, you don't look anymore. Well, she forgot it. This is a novelty. A professor with an absent-minded wife.
That's around us here today.
As we return to the halls, we find Dr. Hall about to leave for his annual poetry reading at the Women's Civic Reform League. But it's a disturbed Dr. Hall, because Vicky has apparently forgotten her usual note of encouragement and support.
I'm sorry young Philip's broke into your time with his love problems.
Oh, I'm quite used to that by now, Vicky. I've spent so much time policing undergraduate affairs of the heart, I feel like a combination of Beatrice Hoover and J. Edgar Fairfax.
I don't suppose you're free to tell me what it was all about. Though I don't know why a boy who wears his heart on his sleeve should object to a passerby listening to it beat.
Well, it seems he was quite upset because his young lady friend failed to... No, it's too inconsequential to talk about.
Oh, yeah, I see. The masculine code of honor. Never discuss man-to-man talk. Well, anyhow, it's time for you to be going. What is it?
I forgot what I was going to say. Not like you. You never seem to forget anything. Practically never, anyway.
Yes. Toddy, hadn't you better get started?
Yes, I suppose I should. Well, goodbye, Vicky.
Goodbye. What's the matter? Have you forgotten something?
No, I believe I have everything. I hope I have, anyway. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye.
Oh, well.
Oh, Toddy!
Yes, Vicky, what is it?
I almost forgot something.
Yes, what is it?
Do you have a clean handkerchief?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, yes, yes. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, well.
Shh.
there, Skipper.
Good afternoon, Professor Heaslip.
And what poetic gem are you dishing up for the girls today, Skipper? Something, I hope, which will bring a tear to the eye, a throb to the chest, and a tendency to clutter up the exit as they depart.
Are you familiar with Emery Dobson's epitaph to an enervating companion?
Dobson? Epitaph to a... No, Skipper, I'm afraid that one has passed me by.
Well, I was just testing your knowledge, Heaslip. I'm really doing The Eve of St. Agnes by John Keats, by request. It's not the selection I would have chosen had I been given a free hand, but with a command performance, one doesn't question the sense of the command.
How right you are, Skipper, how right you are. Mrs. Heaslip, you know, is a moving spirit in the Ladies' Civic Reform League. A crusader, a local Joan of Arc. She hears voices. Yours by preference, Skipper.
Very kind of her, I'm sure. Very kind, very kind.
You appear rather more preoccupied than your attainments as a public poetry reader would seem to necessitate, Skipper. Everything well in hand? Acknowledgement of the introduction all prepared? Got the notes, the throat lozenges?
Yes, I have everything, thank you, Heaslip. And if there is anything which I am missing, I'm sure it's nothing which should perturb an adult mind, one which refuses to make a tragedy of an incident.
I don't follow you, Skipper.
That's very tactful of you, Heaslip. This is my errand, and I must go it alone. Good day to you.
Carry on, Skipper. Gad, what a mournful fellow.
Dr. Hall?
Yes?
I'm Dolores Whittaker.
Oh?
I'm a friend of Philip. You know, the move.
Oh, yes, Dolores Whittaker, of course.
Philip told me about the talk he had with you. Thank you, Dr. Hall. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm glad if I was of any help.
Like you said to Philip, we all have to develop a sense of perspective about these things. When two people have a real relationship, it's silly to be hurt about little things.
Yes, isn't it? Quite silly.
It's like, well, Philip says it's like not seeing the forest for the trees.
I must say, Philip has an ear for a good resounding cliché.
Hasn't he, though? Well, thank you again, Dr. Hall. I know Philip will always be grateful for your advice. Jiminy, when I think how a trifling little thing like that might have busted us up forever.
Oh, my dear, there's a remarkable thing about advice. It's like bitter medicine. So much easier to give it than to take it. And quite often the advisor should save a big, dripping spoonful of it for himself.
Pièce de résistance. Every year, we are honored by the presence of the president of our university, who joins with us in paying tribute to the great poets of yesterday and today. Today's selection, The Beautiful Eve of St. Agnes by Browning.
Pardon me, Keats.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Eve of St. Agnes by Robert Keats.
John.
Oh, what am I thinking of? John Keats, of course. It was chosen by our gracious chairwoman for 1950, Mrs. Grace Heaslip.
Mrs. Heaslip.
But before I present this treat of the afternoon, I would like to take a few minutes to tell you...
Frightening, aren't they? And, Vicky, I do miss your notes. It's the first time you've ever forgotten anything like that.
Doctor, you dropped something.
I beg your pardon, madam?
When you pulled out your handkerchief to wipe your glasses, you dropped this slip of paper.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, madam. Thank you, Vicky.
Oh, not Vicky, doctor. Helen.
Thank you, Helen. Madam. Dear Toddy, do a good show. Thinking of you every minute. Bless you, Vicky.
Now back to the main purpose of this meeting, ladies. It is my great honor and pleasure...
Vicky!
start at your home. How did it go?
Never better. I took four bows, although I may have forced the last one a bit. Milking it, I believe, it's called.
I doubt that very much. You probably ran off stage to screams of encore. Did you find my note?
Yes, my darling, I found it. In my breast pocket. Between my handkerchief and my heart. But Vicky...
Yes, Toddy?
I'm glad I found it, but it didn't have to be there, you know. You're so close to me at all times that a mere note on mere paper is mere trimming. I loved it. But I love you so much more that I don't need words, written or spoken. And, oh, remind me sometime to thank the Texas Moose for helping with my education. By the way, do you remember your Latin?
Oh, well, I can mess around with an irregular verb here and there. So I'm afraid if Julius Caesar asked me to lunch, we'd have rather rough going. Why?
How about amoa massa mat?
No, don't rush me, Julius. Oh, yes. Amamus amatus amens.
Splendid. Vicky, you just made a dead language sit up and smile.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
And here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Be sure to see Ronald Coleman's latest picture, Champagne for Caesar. We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. The other players were Ellen Reed, Gloria McMillan, Lois Corbett, and Robert Easton. Tonight's script was written by Gene Stone, Jack Robinson, and Don Quinn. Our music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolfe, and transcribed by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Next, hear the Falcon on NBC.
The announcer on there, I'm going to see if he could build a house for me, because he was Ken Carpenter.
Roger, Roger.
Roger's not up there to help you.
I have no safety
help
net.
Help you, Lisa. That's the Halls of Ivy. That was sponsored by your favorite beer, Schlitz.
Oh,
Schlitz beer.
Remember, I can almost think of the commercials for it.
I can think of it too.
Yeah. There was a jingle, I think, like two cartoon bears
that used to do Schlitz cartoons as well, like a commercial.
Yeah, I can't.
July 5th, 1950, and Gloria McMillan in that cast there. She played. It was a small part, but you know what? It was her. You could tell.
Oh, her voice.
Her voice is so wonderful. We
it's
love
so
Gloria
feminine.
McMillan.
It is,
and she was so kind to be on the show with us for this this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. And I asked her to come back again. Hopefully she'll want to come back, and we'll play other shows that she was in. I have some Lux Radio Theater with her. I have many other programs. Bob Hope, Red Skelton. I have a lot of stuff with her.
I know there aren't too many. Are there other radio stars alive that we could interview in the future?
Yes. Tommy Cook is... still around. I know that the actor that played Stretch Snodgrass is still around. That's Leonard Smith.
I mean, so, I can just tell you from all the texts that people really do enjoy the interviews, and if we can do more in the future, we will work toward that.
Yeah. It was great having her on the show. She's such a sweetheart.